a certain amount of capital. Capital cannot be the only mode, right? Especially in a business like grocery, unit economics are extremely difficult to figure out. If you figured them out, you won't actually burn a lot of capital, right? What do people spend capital on? Customer acquisition and, you know, and on getting customers to keep coming back repeatedly. We've solved those problems through technology and product. CAC is, you know, less than $2. We are operationally profitable, so, you know, we don't end up spending a lot of capital.
This is Siddharth Ahluwalia. Welcome to the 100X Entrepreneur Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Prime Venture Partners, an early stage VC fund led by Amit Somani, Sripati Acharya, and Sanjay Swami. Prime is often the first institutional investor in category creating tech startups in fintech, SaaS, healthcare, and education, such as EasyTap, MyGate, and SignUp. To know more about Prime, visit primevp.in.
Today, we have with us Jumbo Tail founders Ashish Jinnah and Karthik Venkateshwaran. Jumbo Tail is a wholesale and food grocery platform that provides full-stack services for Kirana stores, including storefront delivery and payment collection for its sellers. It is also a fintech platform that provides payment solution and access to working capital credit from third-party and credit providers to its customers using transactional data and proprietary algorithms. Welcome, Ashish and Karthik, to the podcast.
Thank you, Siddharth. Thank you for the opportunity.
So just to share about your background with our listeners, Ashish is a professional farmer, having worked on his own farmland for a year before founding Jumbo Tail. He's an IITD alumnus. He worked for BCG after completing his MBA from Stanford. Karthik did his MBA from Stanford Graduate School of Business as well. It's at that time he met Ashish. Karthik worked at eBay and then joined Flipkart, where he understood the importance of controlling the full stack. Realizing the gaps in the supply chain, he founded Jumbo Tail along with Ashish. So, want to learn from you both, right? How has, you know, first Karthik and then Ashish, what were your family upbringings like, right? And were you entrepreneurial from the day one, or is it that you wish it came later on in your career, the aspiration to become an entrepreneur? Karthik, over to you.
Thank you, Siddharth. I think it's a good question. I come from a very lower middle class family. From my parents were in the government, and there is no, so to say, an entrepreneurial person. So prior to entering Stanford, I actually served in the Indian Army for 10 years. I took voluntary retirement rank of major. I was in combat, counterterrorism, Siachen Glacier, Uri, Manipur, name a place. I was in infantry. I come from that background. But to me, an entrepreneur is not a person who needs to, you know, found a company. It's like, to me, if you break down entrepreneurship in first principles, breaking down, having a vision, and breaking down that into, you know, smaller steps, motivating other people to join. These are, you know, founding principles of, and also working with very, very resource-conscious environments to absolutely achieve the goal. Be very resolute and show the perseverance. I think armed forces definitely makes you entrepreneurial because in almost all the places, the situation dawns upon you and you need to actually make decisions in split seconds, and you have to actually motivate people to achieve the mission, vision far, far larger than what human capabilities can even have known for themselves. So to that extent, the founding base of my thought process was from these situations. But that said, what I would say is that, you know, I have come to this journey of entrepreneurship with a burning desire to solve a problem. To me, that is the end. These are all the means. And I found that today, nobody is pursuing that vision or having that vision at all in many cases when we started this company. And to that extent, I have to do it myself, and I have to, find people, like-minded people, and that is how my journey started.
Ashish, what about you?
So I come from you mentioned 1 year as an apple farmer. Apples are trees that take long time, long time, and to grow. And while I did that professionally, for about a year and a half before Jumbo Tail, I'm a third generation apple farmer. I mean, everybody in my family grows apples for a living. Has given me a lot of exposure to, the challenges of agriculture in this country from a very early age. And my parents continue to grow apples till this day. And, you know, I think one of their questions always is, you know, when are we going to sell apples on Jumbotail? And I think, you know, there's a time and place for all of that. But I think both Karthik and I, came to this problem and this particular business, not because, you know, we didn't like our jobs or whatever. I mean, we were doing, both professionally. But I think for both of us, we wanted to change the way food and grocery was sold, bought and sold in this country. We believe, you know, every Indian is a consumer. A large part of the country is actually involved in production. And I think if you want to really have an impact on, you know, the largest number of people with your lives, I mean, this we felt was the problem that we wanted to solve. And for me, you know, this is a problem that I've had both personal exposure because of my family background to, but also professional exposure. So, you know, right after IIT Delhi, I went to work at BCG. I spent about 6 years, prior to, you know, Stanford, where Karthik and I met, and then two post that. But out of that, you know, nearly 3 years were spent working on on a project with the government of India and the World Food Program on the public distribution system. This is the system that powers the ration shops in the country. You know, nearly 800 million people in this country get, you know, subsidized food grains out of that system. And it's a system that has a lot of issues. You know, it's a pretty old system. There's a lot of leakage. Targeting is a problem. Getting the food to the right people was always a challenge. And so I was very fortunate, over the course of two stints of a year and a half each, to actually work on a lot of problems in that space, gave me a lot of exposure to, you know, food and grocery supply chains, both from procurement, supply chain, last mile, all the problems that occurred within that. And also the opportunity to deploy a lot of technology in that space. You know, it's a space that's not necessarily known as being very amenable to technology, but, you know, I worked on, you know, applications of Aadhaar, even before Aadhaar, a lot of biometric applications on this, and gained, a very deep understanding of, how these ecosystems work. And that only prompted me to, you know, want to do this faster and, you know, with a little bit more control. And that was what prompted me to go back to Himachal, really, you know, look at this ecosystem again from first principles. Karthik's a lot smarter than I am. He figured out very early on that, you know, starting on the supply side was probably not a great idea. I went around, you know, I tried a lot of different things in that year and a half, you know, looked at food processing, selling directly to consumers, aggregation of different types on the farmer side. And came to the same realization that, you know, this is a problem that's best solved by working from demand backwards. Agriculture food is one of the few industries in this country where, you know, production happens without necessarily knowing what demand exists. And that's actually a root of a lot of the issues. And so we said, Karthik and I have always been, you know, we've known each other for 12 years now. We connected over similar interests, a passion to sort of change the country, do something big that impacted hundreds of millions of people. And we met at a friend's wedding in 2014, and we were talking about what we wanted to do with our lives. And this came up again. And so we said, you know, let's make a great, you know, a big effort of it and really figure out if there's a way to solve this problem using things that we are familiar with, you know, technology, operations, the use of data, the use of e-commerce. And that's what ended up becoming Jumbotail. And it's been incredible, you know, 5+ years now. And, it's a dream come true to be able to work on something that we feel so passionately about on a daily basis.
In both of your conversations, you both mentioned one common word, first principle, you know, first principle thinking. And Elon Musk uses this phrase a lot. How do you both encounter this first, right? I'm really fascinated by it. And what are the frameworks, you know, that you have built yourself on the first principle thinking?
Let me take this question on, right? So first thing is breaking down commerce transaction into first principles. Let's just see what are the three fundamental first principle movements, moving parts, right? There's something called an information flow. So you list a product in a platform. And if you look at actually any transaction, whether it's online, offline, all of these three flows are these are the fundamental first principle breakdown of a transaction. So there's an information flow. What is the product? What's the price, offer, listing, quality, all of those things. And once the information is exchanged between the buyer and the seller, it can be an online catalog listing or an offline over the counter or a combination of both. Then the material flow happens, right? So somebody lifts the product and gives it. It's across the counter in a kirana shop, or if it's over a period of logistics from a FC, a fulfillment center, to the customer. And then there is a financial flow. So where money exchanges from buyer to seller. Now, if you look at these transactions, if you look at all of these transactions in a prepaid online scenario, a financial flow precedes the material flow. In an offline transaction or a cash on delivery, material flow precedes the financial flow. When we looked at the problem of food and grocery, initially in 2008, I was trying to aggregate coconut farmers, and Ashish brought up, you know, I learned some things very quickly. Is that when I went to the first thought was connecting farmers to end markets using an SMS-based platform. This is pre-Flipkart, and there was nothing called internet as we know today. And Nokia N70 was the smartest phone, right? And I was trying to build a SMS-based platform with, you know, shortcode SMS APIs and stuff, and extremely costly transactions. But what I quickly realized is you can quickly bring two sides of the parties together, like how we had an eBay or something like that. But then the other two flows, the material flow and the financial flow, would not happen. So you could somehow cobble together and use the existing lorry services to do interstate transport. Let's say I was trying to connect, you know, Madurai, my hometown, was a very large coconut producing zone. And that's my route. And I was trying to get orders from Delhi and other places, right? So you could still connect these two markets, and then you could still find a lorry service to go and deliver. But how is the financial flow going to happen? And when I looked at, you know, successful models outside, and Amazon was in the, you know, raising and all that stuff, right? So in the US, so long as you solve for information flow, the material flow was taken care of by the FedEx and the UPSs of the world, and the financial flow was taken care of by Visa, MasterCard, and any other digital forms, right? And they were, so therefore a marketplace operator should just need to build only one component, and the other ones were fully scaled and readily available. Now, I came to the conclusion that, first of all, you know, like Ashish said, aggregating all of these farmers, and, you know, if you can't like make the money move back, and I had no, you know, idea about the latest Flipkart would come and invent the cash on delivery at scale. So I knew that this problem needed to be solved, but I was just not having the idea how to solve this problem. And therefore, I said that, you know, you can't make these three movements happen. So now I can only do two at best, and one I can do very well. And then the second one, it's inefficient, but still can be doable. But cash movement, not possible, right? So, and then I realized that, you know, aggregating the demand and solving for all the three flows are going to be important. So this is one example where I was able to break down a problem into first principles, even at the root and genesis of the company. The second place I tell my team right now, so many of the times, you know, we have multiple, you know, we have fundamental design principles. And building principles that we use for actually building technology and products. So the core engineering principle is build for utility, not for use case, right? So break down the use case into underlying utilities and build for those utilities, then that can be mixed and matched, right? So let me give you an example. So when you break down, you know, most FC or fulfillment systems and, you know, transactions and across supply chain centers, right? They will tell you there's a put away job. In Amazon, you probably would know there's a put away job. You receive the product, and then there's a pick job. There is a drop activity that needs to do, and there'll be like some applications and functions, right? So we said, okay, what is it? Like, what is this fundamentally trying to do? Every of this, we found that at the end of the day, it is trying to move a product from place A to place B. So the process is called put away when you do it at a context of receiving the product from a vendor, and it is called a pick or a drop when you're trying to dispatch a product, right? So when we build the product that way, fundamentally, then we have a very, very scalable system that we could use then transform any space. Today, we operate one of the lowest cost supply chains in the world. I would say that for food and grocery, we are an operationally profitable company. For a wholesale food and grocery with such low gross margin profiles. And, you know, I would attribute that because the way we have built our product and technology was we broke down those activities into what is it trying to accomplish. So when you try to say, okay, this is a component that helps any person move a product from product A to product B, then you've broken down the actual utility to the use case. And then now you can actually use the underlying utility overlay on multiple different use cases. Same with inverting, right? Inverting is nothing but, you know, receiving a product from a person A is dispatched to person B. So this is the way that we have broken down, and this is how we try to break down things into the most fundamental objects and discover the underlying utility and try to build for it.
This is something that we've seen across all our teams, you know, be it product, tech, engineering, you know, operations, supply chain. The ability to think, and we test a lot for this in our interview process, you know, we test for core values and we test for, you know, basic principles like, you know, first principles thinking. Because especially when you're trying to change an industry that already exists, you know, it's a very large business, you know, food has been bought and sold since the beginning of time, right? So if you don't have the ability to break it down into its constituent parts, it's very difficult because the human brain always takes over and, you know, has certain heuristics by which it thinks. And those are often the heuristics that actually need to be challenged if you're trying to create something new. And so the ability in all the teams, I think one of the biggest signs of success that we've seen amongst our teams is the ability to question things, you know, not say, you know, aisa hi hota hai or this is the only way it happens, right? And that is often where the root or the true ingenuity comes from challenging things that everybody else assumes to be the only way to do them. And time and again, I think we found that is where you're able to, you know, build competitive advantage. That is where you're able to find unique solutions that either, you know, change the level of service that you can provide at the same cost or, you know, the cost at which you can provide services or create customer delight in ways that otherwise would not be possible. You know, for us, it's a very, very big component of the way we think as a company. And it's something that we, you know, value a lot in the teams that we build and, you know, in the people that we hire.
I want to add one more thing on this point, right? When you are able to discover the underlying, when you break it down into first principles, that's also one more thing that I want to add. What is the first principle trying to do is if you, then it allows you to discover what is the underlying utility. The utility is to move the media or whatever is a wheel. Now, if you are able to get to that point that what this wheel is trying to do in a car, and it is just allowing you to move in a more, you know, frictionless manner than if you have any other way, then you can actually find better ways of actually moving the car faster. Like, and that could be like your magnetic levitation based product or something like that. So basically, that is what is breaking the points into, its first principles, understand what it is trying to do and separate the form and function and solve for function and utility rather than solve for better forms.
The way you told is so beautiful that today one can go about and think about, reinventing every industry. For example, yeah. Elon Musk example is very popular. He said, I'll make electric cars because they are good for environment. We don't emit gases. Why are electric cars going to be expensive? Because the battery costs are huge. What are battery made up of? Copper, nickel, cobalt, right? And why can't we, you know, get our own copper, nickel, and cobalt? So what wonderful thinking. And it's a very complex market, as you said, So I would now want to ask you, Ashish, how has the Jumbo Tail journey evolved? Like, what are the challenges you faced on funding, you know, first, then customer acquisition, customer belief, and the third part, scale? Right? How do you think about the frameworks for scale?
So I think a few things, let me start with things that have not changed throughout the journey, right? I think we started with the fundamental principle that if you look at this business, the structure of this business, who do you build? Is there one actor that you can build your entire thesis around, right? And, you know, when we were starting in 2015, everybody was going gaga about, you know, the future of direct B2C e-commerce and grocery. When we started saying, you know, we'll build for the Kirana, people, you know, said, okay, hey, you know, these guys are going to be gone very soon. Why are you building for, you know, an actor in the industry that is unlikely to remain? And they were looking at the West, they were looking at other markets where, you know, so-called modern trade and, you know, large format retail have taken over and now food, you know, grocery as well. And our bet was, you know, again, looking at it from first principles, we said, you know, Indians buy grocery in very different ways. We buy, you know, small amounts, very high frequency. The Kirana is actually serving multiple functions, which are, you know, is providing a storage space as a service to houses, because our houses are small, fridges are small. We don't have the ability to buy, you know, in large quantities. And similarly for brands and other people trying to reach, the store, to the household, he's providing a warehouse and a sales as a service, right? And so those principles were unlikely to change. In fact, obviously now today, you know, with a lot of other players coming into this space and wanting, you know, recognizing the value of Kirana's, COVID being a watershed moment, at least in the recognition in the public mind. I mean, you know, Kirana's account for 90+%, 90-95% of all food and grocery trade in the country even today, and will continue to do so, in large quantum. So some things around, how we designed the business have not changed, right? We said kiranas will continue to be the future. Let's build around them. And let's really solve for the problems of kiranas, both in terms of, you know, how they buy and as well as what they sell, which is essentially, you know, what we still do. Through that process, you mentioned a few aspects of, you know, how we've gone about and build that business. I think the realization we had was this is a business that has to be built on, you know, incredibly high service levels, on satisfaction. And that's where we've gone out and invested efforts on. And that, you know, also is the way that we think about scaling. You know, the first few years of the company were really around building technology, building, you know, products that allowed us to actually do this seamlessly. We don't have a large sales force on the ground. In fact, you know, 100% of our orders actually come through the app with the retailers going and, you know, ordering themselves. And we're pretty much the only, you know, company of its kind in the world today that actually has that capability. Most people rely on very large sales forces. So the approach over the first few years of the company was build all the parts, build a supply chain, build the ability to, you know, transport and communicate information on both staples as well as FMCG, build, you know, a strong private label portfolio over the last couple of years, build capabilities for kiranas to actually be able to sell to, you know, to their consumers more efficiently through our J24 program. And then once all of those have been, you know, put together in a productizable, largely scalable format, then scale. And so we've gotten to that point over the last year where, you know, we're operationally profitable in Bangalore and the surrounding areas. And therefore now today, you know, the focus over the next couple of years is really about scaling this model as we possibly can. Now, the upshot of doing that has been that, you know, the amount of capital that we have had to spend in this process has actually been a fraction of what anybody else in this ecosystem has done. You know, companies raised about $54 million over the history of this company. 25 of that has come over the last, 3 months. And what that means is that with just $25 million in the first 5 years of the company, we've built a model that today can scale. And now we're, you know, looking at expanding, you know, 3-4x, you know, over this year. And over the next 5 years, building a, you know, $7 to $10 billion business because of the fact that, you know, the model is replicable. It can actually be replicated at scale very, very quickly without a lot of cash burn. So from your question, to your questions, capital, you know, we have always looked at capital as something that, you know, there is a certain amount of capital cannot be the only mode, right? Especially in a business like grocery, unit economics are extremely difficult to figure out. If you figured them out, you don't actually burn a lot of capital, right? What do people spend capital on? Customer acquisition and, you know, and on getting customers to keep coming back repeatedly. We've solved those problems through technology and product. CAC is, you know, less than $2. We're operationally profitable. So, you know, we don't end up spending a lot of capital. Now, obviously, we figured this model out. Now we're going out and, you know, expanding across all of India in an extremely capital efficient manner. The first few years have really been about, you know, getting, you know, the hard things right, you know, getting the operations right. Yeah, as Karthik mentioned, we have the lowest cost supply chain for the sort of things that we do in the country, potentially the world. Right, it throughputs, you know, more than 1 million deliveries every year, and all without all based on an in-house platform that we've built today that allows when we start a new city we can do it in the order of a few weeks, right, without spending a lot of capital. And that's really been the fundamental approach with anything that we try: prove it, build a product around it, make it scalable through technology, and then scale it. And that's the stage that we are approaching right now as far as the business is concerned.
And if you can share, you know, some metrics around where your current scale is at, right? How many number of retail stores, any numbers around GMV or the revenue, as you said.
Kazi, you want to take that?
Yeah. So, we are having over, 50,000 retailers on our platform, and we have just started scaling. So Bangalore used to be our largest market until about 2 months ago. So post completing the $25 million fundraise, we are quickly lighted up three more cities. We are going across South India, and then we have brought up entire North India from Bihar, Jharkhand, UP, Himachal Pradesh, Ghaziabad, Uttarakhand, and Jammu area under tier 3, tier 4 towns. So the rapid scaling has begun, and we will be by end of this year we would well cross $250 million scale, and that is where we would be.
And, you guys opened up a market and there are now other players serving similar. So is it that the Kirana store is ordering from multiple players, or is it has to be exclusive to you?
There's no requirement.
Kirana store, yeah.
I think, you know, Siddharth, this is one thing that people need to understand about businesses, right? And especially Kirana. The Kirana store, in, you know, on a typical basis, actually deals with over 100 to 125 different suppliers today, right? So unlike consumers who say, you know, I'm either, you know, a customer of X platform or Y platform, Kiranas are used to this and, in fact, you know, really want the ability to actually choose across multiple platforms. And all across the world, I mean, you know, this is a case where no retailer wants to be subject to, you know, only buying from one or two people because they feel like they're losing control. To the point about, you know, other people opening up the market, I think it's actually a really good thing. And we've seen this, you know, across the board. Wherever, you know, there are other platforms or other providers trying to, you know, solve similar problems, what they're essentially doing is educating the retailer about alternate ways to actually do business. The retailer has been doing business in a certain way for hundreds of years, right? It's a, actually the biggest shift is actually a change in mindset to try the platform once, right? Try a different way of doing something once. Once they make that, you know, the moment you're able to provide a differentiated level of service, you know, higher convenience, more trust, access to more products, it's a no-brainer for the retailer. And we've seen that wherever other platforms have done that job, it's actually easier for us to go and, you know, actually take on, you know, more share because we've, you know, somebody else has done the hard job of actually educating the retailer and you know, getting them to change their mindset.
So going back to your, you know, roots, how was that, you know, you got your first funding round, who connected you to Nexus, and how has that partnership blossomed over a period of years? Mm-hmm.
So Nexus reached out. Samir is still one of our staunchest supporters. He has invested in every round of ours. We raised $2 million of capital from Nexus, Samir and Suvir, you know, with joining the journey with us, even before we incorporated the company. So, you know, we are very fortunate to work with really good people. It was a starting point itself was, the starting point itself was at a different level for us.
I think when Karthik and I were starting out, you know, we didn't really know about, you know, raising capital, etc. You know, I remember we met Samir, you know, and he said, hey, why don't you come into the office and let's just talk. And we went and, you know, we went and drew a whole bunch of stuff on the whiteboard. It's funny, though, that, you know, what we drew on the whiteboard 5 years later is actually what we built, right? And I think that was, you know, one of the benefits of having thought about this and really spent, you know, this is not, you know, Jumbotail's journey didn't start in late 2015, right? Jumbotail has been is something that's been brewing in, you know, in different ways in our minds. I mean, Karthik talked about his experience in 2008. It's been something that's a labor of love for a long period of time. And so when we went out and drew this thing on the whiteboard, you know, today I have to look, it's interesting that you reminded me, maybe I'll go back and look at maybe, you know, one of the photos that we had. But the network that we have built today, the business that we have built today, in large part is what we drew out on that board that day. And to, you know, Samir and Suvir and, you know, their, Sandeep's, you know, credit, they looked at that and they were like, you know, hey, this looks interesting. This is something that we believe we, you know, we can be excited about. And that, you know, that's where the journey started. And we raised this money without even having a PowerPoint presentation or a model. I mean, it was just, you know, on the back of a conviction about, you know, a business and the way that we believed that it was. And to their credit, they took that leap and have been extremely supportive throughout that journey.
So when you drew that model over the board, was there Jumbotail already in operation or it was more in the plans?
It wasn't. The name itself was not there. We had done a WhatsApp exercise. So, Ashish and I were sort of, you know, in it, and I was on paternity leave. My daughter was just born, like 1 month before, I already had a son, three and a half years old. So it was all like kind of, you know, it was is it the right time or all of those, you know, a typical entrepreneur would ask, right? And I asked only the one question: the market is ready. And taking a cue from Paul Graham's, you know, think about 5 years from now, imagine the world and start building what's missing. And both Ashish and I were very convinced that, you know, the fact that the Kirana stores will be an important part of the economic engine of this country, and their market share may come down from 95% to 80%, but then the market itself is going to double from $400 to $800 trillion. So therefore, the overall, the market will be extremely large and we got to solve for them. Was very, very counterintuitive. And, you know, I had come back from US the year earlier and I had already seen 4G. So there was a bet on 4G and smartphone And you know, we were asked some questions around that, and you know, we never expected a Jio windfall and all of that stuff. But then with conviction, we started one night. I said, Ashish, you know, enough of planning. Let's get started. You know, we went and recruited about 5 retailers nearby our homes, and then we sent out a message at 10:40, and at 10:42 we got an order. All we were looking for at that particular point in time was, does a retailer use internet as a medium at all? So those days retailers used to use this WhatsApp 2G pack from Vodafone and this thing, right? And then they will switch on and off the mobile data. So they will not have an always on mobile data like what we have today. All our intention was, when I send the WhatsApp message, what time does the double tick come? That means that he has switched on and the message has reached. And what time the blue tick comes? That means he has read the message. So at 10:30 we send the message, and 10:42 we got an order. And that was like, extremely, interesting for us. And then we did it, and over again for 3, 4, 5, 10 days, it happened. And all the people were extremely excited, and they were able to, order. There were only 5. So at that time, Nexus was also inviting to call. And I was like, I have to give 100% credit to Ashish. And at all points in time, this company has taken very, very major turns. And Ashish is the single-handedly, he has, turned the direction of the company. So I was not very keen on going and raising VC funds. I was saying, I need more proof of concept and stuff like that. So Ashish said, no, they were inviting, let's go and talk. And then we went and talked. And it just, we went, and the whole day the meetings continued. At night, 1 a.m. in the night, we signed the term sheet and went for dinner along with the new investors on board. So it wasn't a planned journey for us. But we had done some proof of concept. We had some conviction that we could demonstrate at least 5 customers on WhatsApp and things like that. So it was good.
So you signed the term sheet on the same day when you presented to them?
Same day. Yeah. We landed in Mumbai morning. It was a series of meetings. It was supposed to be one meeting. So it was a series of meetings. So one meeting, they were so impressed. Then and I think at the end of the meeting, Suvir asked me, what would you do if this fails? And without thinking, I just said, I'll do it all over again. Like, I'm believing, I could get the timing wrong, but the market is there. And I would try one more time. And I have the perseverance and the energy to go full distance. It doesn't matter to me, because I came here to solve a problem. So that is all, and then that led to the second, and that led to the third, and then more whiteboardings. And then the US team on the other side joined. The Nexus had a US office, and then they joined in the evening. So we presented to the US team. And then at night, 1:30 a.m., we actually signed the term sheet for $2 million. It was an intense one full day.
And nobody
had done this before. No one. The entire world was taking a counterintuitive. Entire world was saying it is, Grofers, PepperTap, Local Banya, Zopper, ZopNow. So everybody was going on B2C grocery. And Nexus had a conviction that grocery cannot be won in this model. And we had the same conviction too. Today, it is very obvious that Kirana store, billions of dollars are flowing into this market. At 2015, we were able to see something that the world was not able to see.
And you were on paternity leave, Karthik, and Ashish, you were already full-time in your own business, right?
Ashish was a farmer. He was full-time farmer. He was running his farms.
So, tells you a little bit about Karthik's risk-taking ability, right? Most people are like, get a nice cushion, get to a place in life. His daughter Kavya was a month old when we started this company, right? And I think we took a call saying, let's just do it. And I think that's been our approach to pretty much all the major decisions in the history of this company. I think we've just said, at some point, there's a logical way of doing it, and the logic gets you to a few options. But at some point, you just have to take a leap of faith and say, if it feels right, just do it. Not everything can be modeled out on an Excel sheet. Many of the things that we're any big change in life, right? It challenges the fundamental assumptions around how you think. And, we found that approach to be really, really helpful, which is if you spend enough time thinking about a problem, it may not show up on an Excel sheet, right? But at some point, if you've done enough preparation, your gut is actually something that you can actually listen to, because it's not just an aimless thing, right? The mind does a whole bunch of subconscious calculations and you come out with an answer. And, more times than not, I think when we've done that, we've come out ahead and the company's taken on a very different trajectory. A lot of choices that we made are very counterintuitive. You know, we started with staples as a category. Everybody used to tell us, you know, go to, you know, FMCG companies. And, you know, today our belief is, yes, you know, FMCG is going to, you know, there's an increasing prevalence of FMCG in the country as you know, GDP per capita goes up, as the country becomes richer, more and more staples will become, you know, processed, etc. And therefore, it is a very important capability that we built. But on day one, we said, you know, let's go and solve the biggest problem that the retailer has, which was, you know, unavailability of, you know, staples at the doorstep. That was another counterintuitive call that we made initially. And, you know, it wasn't, it was based on having been in market. That's the other thing that, you know, both Karthik and I try and do as much as we possibly can and encourage our teams. Even our interview process, a lot of people come back and tell us, you know, we take all people who are interviewing with us, you know, sometimes even, you know, engineers who are interviewing for us early on. Today with COVID, it's a little bit more difficult. But, you know, early engineers have been gone out, you know, told to go out, go to the APMC yard, see what's going on. It was a, you know, it was a real test for everybody to see, you know, are you truly motivated by this? And are you willing to do whatever it takes to actually achieve the outcomes that we set out to achieve?
Wonderful. Actually, that sounds quite a story in hindsight. Karthik, do you remember the date you put in your papers?
I think I put in my papers April 14th, or April 3rd or something like that. And I had given a 4-month notice to Flipkart because I was a director and I had to hand over my charter to 3 more directors that I had to hire or find inside the company. So I had built a fairly large team, including business, product and product marketing, product management, and even some parts of engineering that I had you know, built. So it was sort of a longer gestation period for me.
And what was the date you got the term sheet?
September 16th, 2015.
Oh, this has been a fascinating 5 years.
But you know, to his credit, Sameer reached out 1 week after I put in my papers. Because at that time, I told my this thing and I did not agree to meet him. Because I said my idea itself, I have to go on the market. So I'm a very, you know, I have to have that clarity in my mind. I need to go. And Sameer did not know that Ashish is going to be my co-founder. Sameer already knew Ashish from a different context. So around July or something is the first, you know, meeting we had. After my daughter was born, I started focusing on this whole thing fully. But I think it has been a good journey for us.
And you know, on one thing on finding co-founders, right? You guys like not 20, 21 college buddies who fall in love with each other and then start together, right? That's how usual college startups happen. You were like fairly mature, right? And built businesses, like you built your own professional farming business, Ashish. Karthik, you are a director at Flipkart. How did you each identify, you know, let's take on basis of first principle, that you were both fit for each other as co-founder? What were your criteria for evaluating co-founders? Because you knew that it's a long journey. You want to go ahead, Ashish, first?
Karthik's a much more meticulous person on this one. I'll tell you mine right afterwards. Karthik actually has a structure and a formula.
I'm a hard person. Even though after all of my data and crunching and everything, it is the final, the 2 seconds, because I'm trained to pull the trigger within 2 seconds and I have to make a choice. You know, is it the enemy or the friend? And that's how I live my life, always on the edge. So I have to make when I look at a person, I need to know whether, you know, friend or an enemy. So to me, the only criteria is how long, you know, what are the choices that person has made in life? It's not about what this person would say. I learned this technique while I was actually writing my essay to Stanford. So the first essay for Stanford Business School is that what matters to you and why? And I was writing multiple essays and, you know, I wasn't too happy. The final essay that I actually submitted was the one that I rewrote in the very last hour and without proofreading I submitted. To be very honest, this is actually my story. And it wasn't coming. I was creating this stuff and I was not very happy. So one night before I went and showed to somebody I knew and he was also saying that this is not you. So then I came, what could be the framework? And I stumbled upon this thought with deep thinking and it has actually happened. This is how I'm thinking today. If something matters to you, every leg of your journey, that would have been an important part of a decision-making framework for you. You did something because it matters to you. So you've demonstrated. So I went back and said, okay, what are the, in my 30 years of existence, at major turns I have taken in my life, what were the fundamental founding principles at which, you know, I was basically basing my decisions on? What was I willing to sacrifice everything for that one thing? And I arrived at that thing. So I started using this principle for actually evaluating. Even today, if somebody says to me that, oh, I want to do a startup, I wouldn't believe that. I would say, okay, what have you done in your life so far that actually gets you to where you got today? Right. When I looked at Ashish, I had a lot of people to approach, you know, because I came from, you know, Flipkart. And today, you know, if you look at it, people find co-founders more within Flipkart or other, you know, classmates and buddies. Right. So I wanted to find this one person. I knew this journey is going to be very hard. And, you know, especially when you're going on very hard journeys, you need missionaries who are driven by the mission. And, you know, economic incentives will follow. But I want to find out how these people have made the decisions. And one thing that actually stood is because Ashish, and the way he had worked, he's a farmer himself. So basically, he understands the farming problems. That's the first part. The second one is the choices that he has made in his career like BCG, right? Little known fact about him, the project, you know, that he worked on actually changed the biometric identification system in India and served as a base for, you know, what eventually turned out to be Aadhaar. And he has worked on, you know, million enrollments were happened under the aegis of this project that he led from the BCG. So that is about, you know, solving leakages in public distribution systems. And typically, when you look at a consultant from the top three, big three, BCG, McKinsey, Bain, right, the first thing that comes to your mind is Soot Boot Ka Sarkar. So Ashish, by the way, is actually called Sarkar in his IIT Delhi, you know, campus hostel, but he's not the Soot Boot Ka Sarkar, right? So he was actually traveling in some of the, you know, vehicles and sitting and trying to find these vehicles moving from state to state, understanding where the leakages are happening in a vehicle containing a food grain, all of the stuff. In my school at campus at Stanford, he was so passionate about water and sanitation. I don't know how many people, you know, there is a sanitation plant right outside my apartment complex, of the apartment complex itself. And I'm telling you that you can't go near it. We all have this plan. I think there's a regulatory requirement. You have the plan. Ashish actually, all of us were going on a global trip and he was doing some project in water and sanitation in California and stuff like that. So I was seeing him consistently making choices for what he truly believed. So he was also the convener of India Sanitation Coalition, the conglomerate of all FMCG companies that advanced the cause of Swachh Bharat. So when I looked at the person, I had to find that, you know, demonstration that, you know, this person has actually lived what is he going to claim. Why he wants to be a part of this journey is very important. And then, of course, at that particular point in time, he was actually, you know, solving the problems for the farmers in Himachal Pradesh. He was repeating some of my old learnings, but I was also taking much more comfort that what I learned in 2008 was similar to what you were actually seeing in 2014 as well, right? Things have not changed much. And that also gave us the conviction that we could go forward. And that's the only, only thing that I saw him living what he was saying. And I saw that harmony and that was the most important thing for me.
I think the only thing I would say here, Siddharth, right, is Karthik and I are very different people in the way that we approach the world. But I think what we spend a lot of time on, really, once we said, okay, you know, this is an interesting problem, we're both interested in solving this, was also about, you know, what are our goals in life? The entrepreneurial journey, right? I mean, there's a lot of big choices you have to make along the way around, you know, what you want this company to be, how do you make decisions? You know, how do you think about, the future of the company? What are your core values? What are the things that you hold true to, and really care more about than other things? And I think that was what to me was really important, right? Because a lot of people, I have a lot of classmates who've come, you know, gone out and run very, very large companies. And when I talk to them, I think the biggest, you know, thing for them always was, you know, will you guys think in, you know, similar ways about the important problems, right? It's important to have, you know, a diversity of views, different ways of thinking about it, because you challenge each other. And we definitely do that a lot. But when it comes to, you know, things about what is the culture of this company, right? What do we stand for? What are the goals that we're going after? You know, what do we want this company to be in, you know, 10, 15, 20 years? That's where, you know, I think for me, it was really important to have clarity and alignment on those things, because you have to be able to trust the other person blindly on those big things, right? And And that's what for us, you know, for at least for me, and I remember Karthik and I had long detailed conversations about, you know, a series of questions. And it was very comforting and really important that while we could disagree on a lot of things, on the really, really important things, we had very clear alignment. And that's been, I think, a very important part of this journey. There's ups and downs. There's a lot of difficult choices to be made. If your co-founder is aligned on the things that matter, right? The values, how you want to do business, how you want to build business, what trade-offs you're willing to make, what future you aspire towards, you know, creating in through the company. If those are aligned, everything else actually is easier to solve for. And I think that's been probably the most fun working with Karthik over the last few, you know, over the last 5-6 years is that part is sorted. And to me, before making that decision, I think that was the thing that gave me a lot of comfort.
Thank you so much, Ashish and Karthik. You know, it's been, I'm really enamored by your journey, inspired. Yeah. And it's so much given me joy to know, you know, how you think, how you make decisions. I think entrepreneurs will learn from this podcast so much, right? Especially, you know, the thing, how you describe solving jumbo tailing first, via first principles, how you choose co-founders, right? That's so important. Thank you so much again for being on the 100X Entrepreneur podcast and wishing Jumbo Tail a 100X journey from here.
Thank you, Siddharth.
Thank you very much, Siddharth.